Our next speaker is from Dr. Christopher Taub. That he's from the Dartmouth Danforth Plant Science Center. So he's an expert in the root phenotyping. He's going to talk to us what's going on down there, imaging technology and computational approaches to understand root growth dynamics and genetics.
Thank you. Can you all hear me back there? Okay. No? How's this? Yeah? This? Okay. Appreciate it. I can't hear well and I'm also soft-spoken. It's a bad combination. Thank you very much for the opportunity to tell you about the work you've been doing at the Danforth Center in roots, although increasingly our real interest is understanding integrated plant function. And so what you're looking at here is a combined data set, optical tomography, which is a reconstruction of the plant, combined with PET, positron emission tomography, which allows us to see carbon as it's being fixed in the leaf and moved down into the roots in real time. This is a medical imaging technique, and I'll get back to how this works in a minute. Roots are often, basically always the bottleneck if we're interested in studying plants as an integrated system. So there's a classic slab excavation picture of two root systems. So there's two small shoots up here, and we can see the complexity of the interaction of these two roots. That's at one level, but then at a micro scale, at each of these root tips, we're actually seeing what's happening at the rhizosphere level. So root hairs, soil particles, this is a cross section of the root. This is where the action, the microbiome happens. So we're faced with trying to understand how the plant's working, shoots and roots, but also across multiple different scales. And so this is why roots are always behind, right? It's really, this is state of the art in 1917. So the image I just showed you is basically an archaeology expedition. And essentially, some hyperbole here, but this is essentially the same thing we're doing today. We still have no way of capturing an entire freely grown root system from the field non-destructively. That is still quite an elusive goal. So my group at the Danforth Center develops root imaging, computational and statistical analysis tools that allow us to understand the hidden half a little bit better. And it's really a kitchen sink approach. There's caveats with every major root phenotyping technology, and so we work along the spectrum of essentially agronomic or ecological relativity going one way. On the other side, it's our ability to control the experiment, the environment, and the information content that we get out. This is a really important concept, is being able to see the entirety of the root system gives us new insights. But what we're really interested in is how genes control these different aspects of plant growth and plant environment interactions. And so we try to apply these tools to targeted, mostly maize, but really any crop. I like to say I'm plant agnostic as long as it has roots. And I'll tell you a little bit more about this in a minute. So this is one of our bread and butter approaches, which is, it's quite an artificial system, but it gives us a lot of power. This is about a 2-week-old rice root system. It's growing in a gel and gum in a clear container, and it's being spun around an image. We get these silhouette images. This is optical projection tomography. So what this allows us to do now is really capture the entirety of the three-dimensional architecture of the root system. And Maria set this up very nicely, but basically we're constantly developing new traits, new ways to measure these complex shapes, complex aspects of the biology. And each one of these gives us different insight into how the roots are growing and the genetic basis. So what this also allows us to do is, because it's non-destructive, we can capture this in time. If we're interested in growth, if we're interested in dynamics, with the environment, these necessarily involve time. And again, Maria just set this up quite nicely, but we really need to capture these as a function, not simply static time points. So this is an experiment we did where we automated the gel system. These are two important maize inbreds. You can see with your eyes very clearly the root architecture is different, and we can start to understand how we go from one or a few roots at the end of a week to many hundreds. This is image every 4 hours. So what we're doing increasingly now is really capturing the growth with software, each color here represents a different time point, and we can actually measure each individual root in the root system in the context of the total root architecture over time. That gives us a lot of power. Okay, so on first blush, if we take a trait like total root length and we look over this period of time, it's about 150 hours, it's a week. B73 here is in pink or red, and in blue or green, Missouri 17. The curves actually look quite different. If you look at each individual time point, we can separate these, but there's nothing really dramatically obvious about this. But when we start to look a little bit closer, here we're taking the second derivative, which is just the total root length growth rate, and we see roots accelerate up to about this point, which is about 4 days or so, and then they're still growing, of course, but they're not growing as quickly as they were before. And so these peaks now become very obvious here, where Missouri 17 takes a little bit longer time to slow down its growth rate. But increasingly, we're turning these into mathematical models, very similar to what Maria showed. These are, instead of measuring the area under the curve, we're actually modeling this curve. In this case, is a logistic function, which is an S-shaped curve. It's a very basic general model. But that allows us to turn these trends now into just parameters, four parameters. Alpha 1, 2, 3, 4 are the inflection point, and basically just do a simple t-test to look for differences between the two. I don't have time to explain what each of these are. The manuscript's in preparation, but other plant processes have been modeled like this. And so now we can use these as our traits, and that, again, is a distillation of these complex growth curves. So in along these lines of trying to understand how individual sort of molecular growth processes at each individual root tip manifest themselves over the entirety of root architecture, we're starting now, well, we're well along the way, actually, of understanding and identifying the genes that are controlling gravitropism. This is a gene, DRO1, that it's known it interacts with auxin and basically makes a root more gravitropic. This was the gene that was cloned under the drought tolerance, QTL and rice. It's one of the few genes that we know that controls a quantitative aspect of root architecture. And so if you take these individual growth patterns and manifest over time, if you have this version of the DRO1 gene, you actually get deeper roots. So we can see now the connection between a root tip and the overall architecture. And so playing around with these agravitropic mutants is kind of fun. So we see things like this. So this is actually a root here, and they're just literally growing. They're not anti-gravitropic, but whatever trajectory they start on, they just keep growing like that. But we're increasingly interested in understanding what happens at the architectural level and connecting the dots here. We can see a big difference in the root architecture here. And as we start to look across natural variation, this is a subset of the Mays Nest Association mapping population, the founders, we can see a lot of variation by eye, and we're starting to query whether or not gravitropic genes, for example, actually act as, rather than a switch, the gravitropic or not, actually a knob that we can tune to control quantitative aspects of root architecture variation. These are the type of things that we might imagine we could use in breeding or crop improvement approaches. And so, you know, to support work like this, it's good old-fashioned shovelomics, as the term is, but we dig up lots and lots of roots. This actually started with me in a pickup truck going up to Steve Moose's field. He's here in the front row, and basically saying, hey, can I just scavenge some of your roots? I never even planted a field at the time. And it's grown from that very quickly to us with a mobile field trailer, which we drive around the Midwest, collect roots, and quantify them. But there's a difference in what has been done before. So here we're actually taking images of the roots, and the image looks something like this. This is a size marker here. You'll see it's really important for the next step. This is Nate. He's a postdoc. So this thing has air conditioning and power, and it's quite humane, but we do lots and lots of these. And so this is what's the enabling technology, is a software DIRT that takes these raw images into something thresholded and outputs approximately 70 different features, traits, what have you, phenotypes that describe the complexity of that structure. And so for anyone who cares to sort of take a formal portrait of their roots, you can now go to Cyverse and use the software for free, you can use it today. So it's really lowered the barriers for looking at plants as the entirety of the architecture of plants, roots and shoots. So again, what we're interested in is the genes that are actually controlling the genetic aspects that are controlling this phenotypic variation. And so here we're using a genetic population that, Steve is driven and is now the caretaker of, but it's the product of this long-term Illinois selection experiment in which seed protein has been recurrently selected, either high or low seed protein, for approximately 125 years now. And so I got very interested in this, talking to Steve at a maize meeting and understanding that actually these things take a lot of nitrogen, and that's what's making all the protein is made from nitrogen, and these are kind of bad at it. So to the extent that root architecture is involved in nitrogen uptake, which we have good reason to believe it is, we would expect in these lines to see very different root architectures. So we can see this very clearly in this gel system, and we think we might have some concept of what an ideotype for a high nitrogen uptake. It would look something like this. If you're a root system that it's not good at getting nitrogen, you look something like this. It's not quite as clear when we go to Steve's field in Illinois and look via shovelomics, but using this dirt software, we can quantify phenotypic variation between these two structures. And this now gives us insight into the genetics, because there's a mapping population between these two lines called the IPSRIs, and these are recombinant inbred lines, just showing some of the phenotypic variation for roots. Steve has these now genotyped, and we're using these to map the genetic basis root architecture. And this is part of a plant genome project with Ivan Baxter, Andrew Leakey, and Nigel Goldenfeld. We're looking at the seed ionome and how roots are related to the elemental content of seeds, and also using a mini rhizotron analysis to try to understand the relationship of deep roots to these superficial root crowns that we can get. So that project is well on its way, but we have some really nice early results. So I think you're oriented now to these Manhattan plots. This is the trait root system width, and so we have a positive hit for a SNP here for root system width on chromosome number 10. And as we start to drill down to this, there's actually a candidate gene here that we've identified through this GWAS approach. And so we've been able to do this now for a number of genes. So this is the candidate gene here. And for width and a couple of other traits, we've identified some candidate genes. But I'm highlighting this one in particular. Although we don't have a mutant in maize, we have one in sorghum. So this is the wild-type sorghum, BTX623. And this line has a mutation in that candidate gene. And you can see, hopefully you can see, at least the shoots are pretty similar, but there's quite a big difference in the root architecture. And if you zoom in, you can see it here. So we think we're on the right track. We may have actually identified a gene controlling root architecture in maize. And of course, we're following this up in a number of ways, including functional studies, asking the question, does this architecture actually capture more nitrogen? That was the whole premise. But really putting these structure-function relationships together is obviously going to be important. Another aspect of this grant, and in combination with a project I have with Valent Biosciences, where we're interested in root rhizosphere interactions, is the acquisition of an industrial-scale X-ray CT system. This is the X5000. It's used typically in aerospace industry for measuring literally like parts of airplanes and engine blocks and for non-destructive testing, but it's really nice because it has a huge volume, so we can measure about a 2x2x4 foot, maybe even taller, plant in here. This is a corn plant, it's a little bit smaller, but just to show you essentially how it works. So this now allows us to use X-ray imaging, and I don't have time to show you how X-rays work, but it's basically just differential contrast, similar to light imaging. So you can see here, we're basically taking slices, and if you're looking down from the top of the plant into the soil, we're looking at slices. It might be kind of hard to follow the roots here, and it's hard for a human eye, but it's also hard for a computer. So it skipped ahead here, I apologize, but essentially in red here, this is a software that a postdoc in the lab, Ni Jiang, has developed that tracks the growing roots and basically segments them from the soil. And when we take all these red parts and reconstruct it, we now have a 3D reconstruction of a living corn root, right? And we can do this over time. And this isn't perfect. There are roots that are missing, and there are a few things in here that are not roots. This is a major bottleneck, and there's a lot of people working on it, including us. So one approach that we're taking is actually a machine learning approach. This type of data really sets itself up well for machine learning. And I know this doesn't look quite as good as this. This is a soybean root, by the way. It doesn't look quite as good, but this was done in hours and is repeatable. This was a combination of semi-automated methods plus a lot of manual root tracing. So we still haven't made a lot of progress there. We're still measuring a lot of stuff by hand. But when we have a very nice example of this, it's quite exciting. So this is a soybean with nodules from Bradyrhizobium symbioses. You probably can't read this, but this is just a suite of different things that we can measure now that we can capture the 3D architecture of living root system. Here in false color, obviously, are the nodules here, and so we can very easily count. This one has 19 nodules, and so we're basically doing longitudinal studies every week for 3 weeks, and we've got many dozen data sets like this now that we're in the process of analyzing. And so this is a graduate student, Carrie Miller, who's doing this work. But with this X-ray, we can actually zoom in a little bit more. So in this case, this is a fixed. It was cut and fixed, but you're looking at a piece of the root and actual internal structure of the nodules. X-rays can actually pass through the object, so we get internal structure as well. It's a little fuzzy. You can see some interesting stuff there, but it's right at the edge of our resolution. So this is where a new instrument comes in that we're very close to acquiring. This is an X-ray microscope, so it's also X-ray based, but it's really on several orders of magnitude of resolution higher. So this is a cross-section of the root. This is the connection between the nodule, and you can see the bacterioids in here, and the root. And so this looks kind of like an SEM image, kind of a low fidelity SEM image, but it's actually only an optical cross-section of this 3D reconstruction. So we actually have this information for the entire three-dimensional structure, and that's what this looks like. And so we're actively developing different, basically, ways to quantify the variation in shape from this nodule. And you can see now we're optically just slicing through it. So this gives us a really new window into root rhizosphere biology. So that's all I'm going to say about that for the time being. But we're also using this X-ray system to capture more information out of these complex architectures that we have. So I showed you this DIRT software, which takes a 2D representation of a complicated 3D object. We've used it. It's working well. We think we can identify genes with it. There's actually a lot more information here than what can be seen in a flat two-dimensional image. And so we can, on the order of minutes, we can actually capture three-dimensional reconstructions. This is B73, this is Missouri 17 here, and we can extract features from these that gives us a better discriminatory power than we can capture in 2D. So here's three maize inbred lines at tasseling, and when we use our DIRT software, this is a very limited example, there's just three of each and the colors match up here. This is a principal component analysis with all the DIRT traits, okay? So we can see very clearly that the first principal component separates KY21 from B73 Missouri 17, but these two really aren't separated by the second principal component, even though we can see by eye they clearly look different. So we're not really capturing all of that phenotypic variation. When we use the X-ray images and the features that we can extract from 3D, we actually get a very nice clustering. And you can't read this, but there's more variation captured in these two axes than here as well. So this is basically giving us better discriminatory power, better phenotypes, which means better phenotype to genotype associative power. And that's really critical for us, because if I handed these things to you and said, hey, measure these, it's not so easy to do with a pair of calipers and a ruler. And so we've now applied this to time series analyses of roots, where we've taken the NAM founders, these diverse inbreds, and sampled. This is a pseudo-sampling, but we just had a replicated plot, and we went every week with our trailer, we dug up the roots, and we scanned these with X-rays now, and so we're trying to develop now this time series. I'm going to briefly go through this because I'm running out of time. We can also, and I thought it might be of interest here, this is a sorghum panicle. This is also something, if I handed it to you, or I handed two different panicles to you and said, measure these, it might be hard to do. It certainly would be hard to do non-destructively. And so there's an applied mathematician in the lab who's developed some mathematical and computational techniques to separate the seeds in real, basically non-destructively, computationally, from this panicle. We can now look at the grain distribution in 3D. So we actually have all of that information. We can see number of grains, spatial distribution, their size. This is just the size as distributed over the entire panicle. We can also, once we have the seeds, we can remove those digitally, and we're just left with the branches. So this is actually each individual branch is segmented here, and we can now look as a function of each node, how many branches are in each node, and quantify lots of different architectural features of there, and now tying seed and architecture together. We've done similar work with grapes, which I won't really have time to explain, but also very complicated structures, and using a mathematical approach called persistent homology, we're able to discriminate really well amongst these different complex shapes, again, giving us better possibility to understand the genetics. And finally, because we have, for example, berries or seeds and the architecture, we're starting to really move towards developing empirically based models that capture these complicated processes in real time. Sorry, the movie's not working, but I think you get the idea. We can put two and two together here, and we can see this as a function of development. In the final just couple of minutes here, I want to get back to the PET, because this really ties the structure and the function and the underlying molecular dynamics and physiological processes. So really briefly, this is a corn plant, and this leaf is being fed a radioisotope of carbon in the form of carbon dioxide. And in a matter of minutes, these are minutes, this is real time, and you can see multiple pulses. This is being fixed into sugar, and the sugar is being moved down into the roots, and that's an imaging artifact. So in about 15 minutes, it goes from gas to sugar in the roots, and this is what's driving growth, driving carbon allocation decisions. My collaborator here is Ty, he's a nuclear physicist at the med school next door. So this now allows us to capture carbon flux in real time, so we get about 2.5 hours of carbon flux, and at the med school they call these subjects, so we have three corn plants here. It also allows us, if we do this every day, because it's a short-lived isotope, we can do image basically every day, we can capture the carbon dynamics over developmental periods. And this can give us some new insight. For example, here at a very young stage, we can see there's a root system, but none of the carbon is going to roots. I don't know if you can see it that well. The one exception is there's a little second spot here, and that's from this shoot-derived root. But on the next day, about when the second leaf is emerging, you might be able to see it in the image here, all of a sudden the dam breaks and the roots are no longer being driven by seed carbon stores, but now the plant is functioning on its own, and it's its own photosynthate that's driving growth. So just an idea of some of the new insight we can capture. And so now we're actually funded for 3 years to combine these X-ray, these longitudinal studies I told you about, with PET. So this is not a very good multimodal image, but use your imagination. We're still trying to line the PET and the X-ray data up. But essentially, this is the X-ray reconstruction, and all this colored stuff here is carbon going into the nodules. We can also use nitrogen tracers and measure the nitrogen coming out. And so you can see that we still have work to do. Like here, there's no root, but there's obviously a root there. That's because we're not great at segmentations. But we're now developing these combined structure function data sets, and so you can look forward to more of that in the future. So with that, I'd like to thank my lab and the funding sources, and there may not be time for questions, but I certainly will stick around at the end of the session. Thanks for your attention.